Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears off and running with you here on this Wednesday morning, September 30th, 2020, the last day of September 2020, 9:30:20, 15 minutes past the hour, and I guess we call this the morning after. 60 years we have been having presidential debates on national television since 1960, and last night, as you go through the periodicals this morning, the New York Times, the USA Today, whatever newspaper you might read, any pundit on television or radio this morning is calling it the worst debate in the history of television. And they were saying it immediately after it was over. Now, we have got a great guest here this morning who's going to help us unpack a lot of this. But I do want to do some things just to get some frame of reference on this. Number one, we have shrunk down, hopefully, some substantive moments from last night's debate here in about 4 minutes. So here is last night's debate, hopefully, in 4 minutes. If you didn't hear it, take a listen, and we're going to come back momentarily.
Are you willing tonight to condemn white supremacists and militia groups, sure, and to say that they need to stand down and not add to the violence in a number of these cities, as we saw in Kenosha and as we've seen in Portland?
Sure,
are you
I'm
prepared
willing
to specifically
that, but
do it?
Well, I would say almost everything I see is from the left wing, not from the right wing.
So what are you saying?
I'm willing to do anything. I want to see peace.
Then do it, sir.
Say it.
You want to call them? What do you want to call them? Give me a name.
White supremacists and
right wing. Who would you like me to condemn?
White supremacists and right wing.
Proud Boys, stand back and stand by. But I'll tell you what. Somebody's got to do something about Antifa and the left, because this is not a right wing problem. This is a left
wing.
This is a left wing problem.
The question is,
Justice, radical left.
Will you shut up, man?
Listen, who is on your list, Joe?
This
Who's
is
on
so
your list?
Right.
Gentlemen, I think
this
we've
is
ended
so
this.
He's going to pack the court.
We have
not going to give a list.
We have ended this segment. Wait a minute. You get the final word, Mr.
Well, it's hard to get any word in with this clown. Excuse me.
Let me just say to you.
No. I'm Mr. President.
Three and a half million, Joe.
This month, your administration directed federal agencies to end racial sensitivity training that addresses white privilege or critical race theory. Why did you decide to do that, to end racial sensitivity training? And do you believe that there is systemic racism in this country, sir?
I ended it because it's racist. I ended it because a lot of people were complaining that they were asked to do things that were absolutely insane, that it was a radical revolution that was taking place in our military, in our schools, all over the place. And you know it, and so does everybody else.
What is radical,
and he would know.
What is radical about racial sensitivity training, sir?
If you were a certain person, you had no status in life. It was sort of a reversal. And if you look at the people, we were paying people hundreds of thousands of dollars to teach very bad ideas and, frankly, very sick ideas. And really, they were teaching people to hate our country. And I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to allow that to happen.
40,000 people a day are contracting COVID. In addition to that, about between 750 and 1,000 people a day are dying. When he was presented with that number, he said, it is what it is. Well, it is what it is because you are who you are. That's why it is. The president has no plan.
Will you tell us how much you paid in federal income taxes in 2016 and 2017?
Millions of dollars.
You paid millions of dollars?
Millions of dollars,
so
yes.
Not 750.
Millions of dollars, and you'll get to see it. But let me just tell you, Chris, let me just tell you something, that it was the tax laws. I don't want to pay tax. Before I came here, I was a private developer. I was a private business people. Like every other private person, unless they're stupid, they go through the laws, and that's what it is. He passed a tax bill that gave us all these privileges for depreciation and for tax credits. We build a building and we get tax credits like the hotel.
The tax code that made him, put him in a position that he pays less tax than a school teacher makes, on the money a school teacher makes, is because of him take, he says he's smart because he can take advantage of the tax code. And he does take advantage of the tax code. That's why I'm going to eliminate the Trump tax cuts. And I'm going to eliminate those tax cuts and make sure that we invest in the people who, in fact, need the help. And the idea that he is insisting that we go forward and open when you have almost half the states in America with a significant increase in COVID deaths and COVID cases in the United States of America. And he wants to open it up more. Why does he want to open it up? Why doesn't he take care of the American? You can't fix the economy until you fix the COVID crisis. And he has no intention of doing anything about making it better for you all at home in terms of your health and your safety.
I am urging my people. I hope it's going to be a fair election. If it's a fair election, I am 100% on board. But if I see tens of thousands of ballots being manipulated, I can't go along with that. And I'll tell you what, from a common sense,
does that mean you're going to tell your people to take to the streets?
It means you have a fraudulent election. You're sending out 80 million ballots. They're not equipped to, these people aren't equipped to handle it, number one. Number two, they cheat. They cheat. Hey, they found ballots in a waste paper basket 3 days ago, and they all had the name military ballots. They were military. They all had.
The fact is, I will accept it, and he will too. You know why? Because once the winner is declared after all the ballots are counted, all the votes are counted, that'll be the end of it. That'll be the end of it. And if it's me, in fact, fine. If it's not me, I'll support the outcome. And I'll be a president not just for the Democrats. I'll be a president for Democrats and Republicans.
And there it was. And before we get to our guest, what I want to do is just read some of the tweets that are out this morning from some people really on both sides of the aisle here, but here are some of the things that we saw last night. Dana Bash, CNN chief political correspondent, who was at the debate last night in Cleveland, that was an expletive show. We go to Megyn Kelly. What an expletive show, Kelly tweeted. Biggest loser of the debate was us. Rachel Maddow, perhaps we could also debate by mail, referring to mail-in voting. It goes on and on. Jake Tapper from CNN, that was the worst debate I've ever seen. It wasn't even a debate. It was a disgrace. The American people lost tonight because that was horrific. George Stephanopoulos, I have to speak personally here. That was the worst presidential debate I think I have ever seen. Katie Couric said of this field day this week, she also quoted James Carville, I get paid to watch it, and it was a struggle for me. It goes on and on and on. Brian Williams will read the last one here. Difficult to watch. What a dark event we have just witnessed. Even Sean Hannity. well, here's Sean Hannity from Fox News. Prefer a new style of debate. So, there you go. And I do want to let you know, we just learned that former ABC News correspondent, White House correspondent, anchor Sam Donaldson will be joining us in hour number two this morning to give his thoughts on this historic event that happened last night. But this hour, we're joined by one of my favorite people making a return visit. She was here last week, but after last night, how could you not talk about it and have her on? Long-running panelist on the television series The McLaughlin Group, current reporter for The Daily Beast. What a pleasure it is to welcome to these microphones and see what she thinks, Eleanor Clift. Eleanor, boy, what happened last night?
Well, you know, I watched the debate on CNN, and the analyst came on right afterwards, and Dana Bash said what you just said, expletive show, and Tapper said, you know, it was a disgrace, and Wolf Blitzer said, I think that may be the last presidential debate that we'll see in this season. And I wrote in my notes, last debate, question mark. I thought it exposed the president that we have for what he is, that he was unable to lay out any second-term agenda. He was just insulting and bullying. He basically endorsed civil unrest, telling the Proud Boys they should stand back and stand by. He had no good answer on the virus as to why he didn't do a better job reining it in when this country, we have almost a quarter of the cases worldwide, and we only have 4.5% of the global population. Didn't have a good answer on his personal taxes. He went into the debate losing, and he's continuing to lose. And I thought that Joe Biden, for all of the apprehension, even among Democrats going in, that the Republicans had cast him as this, doddering old man. Doesn't have the energy to handle the job. He can't deliver a cogent sentence. He handled himself very well. He looked at the camera. He tried whenever he could to explain what he's about and what his message is about. So, I mean, I don't know this notion that we want to shut down more debates. What are we protecting? This is who this president is, and I think the American people got a sustained look at it last night. Anybody who's been following his rallies or his press conferences in the White House, he didn't say anything last night that he didn't say before. Lots of discredited things about how Obama was spying on him and, and his, complaining that, he built the greatest economy ever. And then this terrible virus happened, and what he went through, his inability to frame anything in the sense of the people that he's supposed to be keeping safe and leading. So I thought it was a rout on Biden's part. I've only seen one poll, and I don't know how trustworthy these instant polls are anyway. It was a CBS poll, and they had Biden with 48% and Trump with 41%. So it's not what I would call a rout, but it's certainly in keeping with the lead that Biden has nationally, which has been quite durable throughout this contest. And I don't think anything happened last night to help President Trump claw his way back. I think he went into this debate losing, and I think he's continuing to lose, and I think it was a revealing episode for the American people, not only of Trump, but also Biden. Most people, unless you live in Washington and you've been aware of him as a senator and and vice president, you really haven't had much of a good look at him during this campaign season. So I thought he acquitted himself well. He seemed comfortable. He tried to laugh off some of the more bizarre rants. He probably said a few things that when you encapsulate them, make it look like he was, throwing punches as deftly as the president. But he got enough words in, I think, to give the American people a sense of who he is.
Eleanor, I think, at least the narrative that, after reading some papers this morning, watching some news, and watching my social media feed last night while it was on, I think what has happened here that is making this such a big deal, and I did watch the CNN coverage last night, and I did think it was weird because the Wolf Blitzer comment about no more debates came, it was the first word you heard as soon as the debate closed.
Right.
I didn't quite understand that. But I think the difference is, we have seen President Trump, the Republican primary debates of 2015 and 16, he was up there a lot. He did three debates with Hillary Clinton presidential. They weren't the prettiest things in the world, but they weren't last night. It was different. The moderator, I think, clearly lost control. I'm not sure what more he could have done, Chris Wallace, but he couldn't make anybody be quiet. It went back and forth. We heard Biden say to the president, shut up. We heard him call him a clown. And
he said, shut up, man.
Shut up, man. He did say, shut up, man. He did. Called him non-presidential. And he called him a clown twice. And I think the second time he realized he shouldn't have done that because he backed
up. Yeah, he said, excuse me, president. Right,
agree. And in 60 years of debates, I don't think I've ever heard anybody call a sitting president racist during a debate. Just say, you're a racist.
Well, his comments about the suburbs did prompt a sort of one of Biden's longer uninterrupted answers that, you know, the suburbs, he said, you wouldn't know a suburb unless you took a wrong turn. And he said the suburbs, this is not the 1950s, the suburbs are integrated, you have carpooling, and you have kids of different races going to soccer games together. So I think he called the president out on using, I think he called them racist dog whistles or dog whistles, which is not anything new that this president has been accused of. So I don't think that stepped over the line in terms of what Biden said. I must say, I felt, knowing Chris Wallace was the moderator going into this, reassured me, because he's a tough interviewer and he's an equal opportunity. He goes after both sides, and I don't think anybody can accuse him of being, you know, favorable to one side or the other, although the president obviously is now casting him as fake news. And he said at one point, Biden gets all the good media, and he Trump doesn't get any good coverage. There's some discussion this morning that Wallace could have called on the audio people to shut down Trump's mic, or to do both of them shut down their mics, I guess, if they're interrupting. That's a good feature going forward. But I'm not critical of Chris Wallace. I think it was very difficult. And again, he's dealing with a sitting president of the United States, and he's trying to corral him. It's not an easy task. So the next debate is a town hall format, I believe. So you're going to have voters asking questions. So that's going to be a little different also. But I'm sure Trump will use every opportunity he can to go directly after Biden. And then I think the last debate traditionally has been about foreign policy. And that could be very contentious as well. So I think the notion of one or the other candidate walking away from this doesn't make any sense. Why would Biden walk away? It would make Trump-leaning people think that he's afraid, and he certainly isn't. And if Trump walked away, the debates are a few of the last opportunities he has to try to reverse the trajectory of a race that he's losing. So I don't see either of them abandoning this, although there are probably some heated discussions with the debate organization, and whether they can institute some more controls to kind of keep the debate more orderly, because you couldn't really even follow what they were saying at one point because all three of them were talking at the same time.
And I certainly don't want to condemn Chris Wallace. I think he's a tremendous journalist. I think he's done this before, presidential debates, and has done it very well. I do think that question came up, and not to say that any of us would have done it any better, because we might have screwed it up as bad. But the audio question did come up a lot last night, because if both campaigns agree not to talk during the other time, and the first time it happens, you let it go, the second time, third time, when it's 90 minutes of it, I thought at one point he would have said, cut his mic, because that would not be a big deal on live television to hit the mute button or to cut Biden's mic. He did interrupt a few times as well. I don't know why that didn't happen. And watching Chris Wallace, who I've watched for years, even back when he was on ABC and through doing presidential debates, I have never seen such uncomfortable body language. He looked uncomfortable last night, I thought.
Well, I mean, he knew he was losing control, and it was hard to get it back. And he's dealing with the leader of the free world and a challenger who wants to take his place. So I mean, the stakes are pretty high. So I'm sure he went in there anticipating that Trump would behave this way, but not to this degree. He's stream of consciousness. He just, whatever comes to his mind about a particular issue, and he just goes on, and he does not abide any boundaries. And, when his people were saying, oh, he didn't do anything to prepare for the debate, and he was kind of boasting you know, my everyday life, has, my whole life has prepared me for this. You know, I'm working as president, I'm prepared. It was clear last night he hadn't really prepared anything. He didn't have any, you know, zinging one-liners that he hadn't used before. He didn't have any coherent outline of what he would do in a second term. I mean, his campaign is all about winning. It's not about any kind of plan he has. And this notion that he has a health care plan because he signed an executive order, which, as Vice President Biden pointed out, is largely symbolic. He has no legislation that can pass. That's how we make laws in this country. And he takes credit for protecting people with pre-existing conditions when that was passed under Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, 10 years ago. And his administration is in court trying to undo that law, claiming it is unconstitutional. And those arguments will be heard a week after the election. Interesting, the Supreme Court nominee was the first, Supreme Court was the first issue that they discussed. It really didn't raise hackles as much as many other issues. And I thought, you know, Biden successfully steered it to what will happen to the Affordable Care Act if Amy Coney Barrett is seated. And he said, you know, I'm sure she seems like a very nice lady. I don't have any problem with her. But she did write in 2014, is it? Or she did write that she thought the Affordable Care Act was wrongly decided and was unconstitutional. So it's kind of a tip-off as to where she might be. And so that was appropriate to raise. So that, I think that was kept in context. You know, I did a preview of the debate for the Daily, that posted on the Daily Beast, and I talked to a professor at Claremont McKenna College out on the West Coast. Jack Pitney is his name, and he was a Republican operative in Washington before he went into academia. And he said to me, if I were advising Biden, I would tell him, repeat after me, 200,000, 200,000, 200,000, basically to focus the evening as much as he can on the virus and this president's handling of it, which I think is a history will render as one of the most epic failures of leadership in modern history. And I think Biden successfully did do that. He did it with the suburbs, too. And the worry in the suburbs is not that they're going to be destroyed by integration or affordable housing. It's that they're dying from the virus, just like everybody else. So, you know, I openly am willing to have my views challenged, I don't see how too many people could come away from last night thinking that this was any kind of a win for the president.
I think one of the there were two things that struck me, and we'll kind of go through them separately here, just about the debate in general, because there is so much backlash this morning, and one of the things I want to talk about is the backlash last night. I was watching the social media feed during the debate, and I usually have done that. I did that in 2016 when social media was very prevalent with the Hillary, Trump, the three debates that they had. Everybody. I knew Trump supporters on there, people in the area. I knew Trump supporters and I knew Biden supporters, and they all were saying the same thing for the first time this political season. I can't understand anything. We're in trouble. I'm turning this off. That was the I didn't see one positive comment about this debate in that entire feed last night.
Well, I would remind you that the Twitter universe is not necessarily the real world. And, you know, Joe Biden wouldn't be the Democratic nominee today if you thought the Twitter universe was calling the correct shots. So I really, I don't know, I'm just not going to measure my response on that. We have a system of government here where we're going to vote between two individuals. It's It's a choice in the sense that you have a choice between two individuals, but generally when an incumbent president is up for re-election, it's a referendum on that person's leadership. And I don't think that Trump did anything last night to make the election about anything more than him. I mean, he was the center stage. He's what everybody's talking about today, and it's mostly not favorable unless you're, you know, a hardcore believer in Trump and you're not even shaken by the news that he has never been the successful businessman he claimed to be, and that he's living this very high lifestyle, basically on borrowed money and lack of paying taxes. I mean, I think I don't think Biden jumped on that as much as he might have. You know, he could have asked, "Where's the $750 tax plan for everybody else that he has?" But I, you know, the president didn't have a good answer on taxes other than to say, "You'll see them." And I think Chris Wallace said when, and I think Biden said when. You know, we've been hearing that since 2015, I think, we're going to see his taxes. The only way we're going to see them is, you know, if they're reported through very aggressive investigative reporting, which the New York Times did, and or when he leaves office, when he will be facing civil and maybe even criminal charges in New York.
Ellen, I think you're exactly right that I don't think we can measure things by the Twitter universe or Facebook or any other social media outlet. I guess just the stark thing to me was, usually during these debates, even the primary debates that have went on, whoever you support, it seems that people say, oh, okay, they got a good shot in, the other side, they got a good shot in, we like this moment, why doesn't this person answer this? I didn't see a whole lot of that last night. It was just... This is a bad thing to watch. And I kept also hearing this, and I heard this from the anchors afterward as well, say, imagine if this was the first debate your child ever watched. Imagine if you're an 18-year-old kid, and for the first time you're making up your decision on who to vote for, and you were 14 in 2016, and you actually watched this first debate last night. This is what you think it is.
Yeah, but this isn't a surprise about Donald Trump. Go back to the Access Hollywood video, you know, weeks before the election in 2016. Go back to him, you know, mocking a New York Times reporter with a disability. Go back to him calling names. His admission to Bob Woodward that he knew on February 7th that the virus was airborne and deadly, and nonetheless kept telling the country we need to open up and we don't need to wear masks. This is the president we have, and I don't think shielding him makes any sense. So if you didn't like the debate last night, then you don't like the president and the way he behaves. And a lot of the people who support him say they like his policies, but they don't like the way he behaves. Well, you know, he behaves this way on the world stage, and it's not a secret, and it shouldn't be a surprise the way he handled himself last night. But we do have an election here in, 5 weeks? And I don't think he did anything to help himself, and he really has been very clear about his plan to win, which includes drawing a line between in-person voting and mail-in ballots that arrive and are counted after Election Day. And he very much wants to be able to declare victory on Election Day. And back to the Twitter universe and Facebook, I think Facebook has said that they are not going to post any declarations of victory on election night. They're not going to adhere to them until the election is certified. I think there is an understanding that is beginning to take hold that in the middle of a pandemic, you're going to have a lot more people voting by mail. Now, I think 33 million people voted by mail in 2016, and in 2018, a quarter of the ballots were mail. So, you know, we know how to do this, but not all states are going to have all the counting done. And this president has floated the idea of states that are sympathetic to him, with Republican governors and Republican legislatures, that they could conclude that the mail-in ballots can't be trusted, and then they will then nominate their own set of electors, and they would obviously be loyal to Trump. And he's already talking about how this vote would be held in the House of Representatives. This is incredible in a country that prides itself on, you know, the peaceful transition of power. And I must say, Ohio, it was an interesting piece the other day, I'm not sure who wrote it, about Ohio being the answer to any election chicanery, in the sense that Ohio does a good job of counting. It's got a Republican governor and a Republican Secretary of State. And you have polls that show Biden, in some polls, is actually leading in Ohio, a state that the Democrats did not win in 2016. And I think the head of the Democratic Party in Ohio, I think his last name is Pepper, you know his name?
Yeah, David Pepper.
David Pepper, who wrote an interesting novel, which I just recently listened to on audio, about big data and how it can be used to corrupt in an election. He has basically said, you know, the Ohio solution is, if Biden can actually pull out a victory in Ohio with a state that has Republican leadership and a state that is expected to be able to handle the vote count, that would be a very good indicator on election eve of where the election might be going. Now, David Pepper, of course, has a vested interest in as the party chair, but I thought he made a good point, that the way out of this would be if Biden really does win by a substantial margin. And Biden said last night, he said, of course, he would abide by the outcome, and he said, and he will too, because once the votes are in and they're counted, it will be clear who the winner is. And it's still I'm not saying that Trump can't win, but as of now, he is losing in every poll that you can measure. And so I think we're going to see even more disruptive behavior from him in the weeks ahead, because he's naturally inclined to be disruptive, and he has to change the trajectory of the race if he's going to win. And so the only way he knows how to do that is to be even more disruptive.
You know, Eleanor, the biggest question I had last night, when it was over and we went back to the pundits and we went back to the cable news channels and we went back to some network news up until 11 o'clock last night and all the newspapers this morning, there were three presidential debates in 2016, and Donald Trump participated in all of those with Hillary Clinton's heavens knows there were tense moments. I mean, we had Bill Clinton's mistresses at one of those. We had Access Hollywood 48 hours earlier. We had nasty woman comments. We had all that. But it was not treated like last night. It never went back to the rooms of the network news. It never went back to the pundits. It never went back to the newspapers and said we should never have another presidential debate, and this was the worst one in 60 years of presidential debates. Chris Wallace, I think, moderated the last one between Hillary and Trump.
He did.
Yeah, what
he did.
What happened last night that was different than the three from 2016?
Chris Wallace did moderate the last one between Trump and Hillary Clinton, and that was the one where Trump was saying the election was rigged, and where he was saying he might not abide by the results, and that was the big news, because everybody expected at that point, according to the polls, that Hillary was going to win. So, yeah, we've been here before. I think what was different last night, well, there were no commercial breaks. There was no respite from it. And it was just, it was just hyper. It was just a stream of insults and bullying and ranting. And but I mean, I don't get why they would say no more debates because the democracy is under threat. I mean, I think there's this feeling that what happened last night just denigrates our whole system, that it makes, as you said earlier, you know, what if your children are watching this, you know, are they going to want to grow up to be president? Do they see this as a role model? I think Biden, for the most part, provided a quiet and aggressive enough, but a dignified role model of leadership in a very difficult situation. And I don't think you save the democracy by backing away from how a particular leader behaves. Now, will Trump take a message from this and think that he should behave differently in the next two debates? I suspect he'll turn to his base, and his base will be cheering him on and will be looking at all this second-guessing as just an effort to shut their guy down. So I think probably Trump will be even more emboldened as he goes forward as opposed to chastised. You know, New Jersey, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie was spotted at the White House, and he was in the crowd in the hall last night, along with Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor of New York City. They presumably helped prep Trump for the debate. I can't imagine that Christie would have encouraged the behavior last night. Maybe Giuliani would. I think Giuliani has gotten, in my view, a little unhinged recently. He's been basically calling Biden as senile. I mean, the notion that Biden is going to be held captive by Bernie Sanders and the left-wing mob, Trump tried that out a couple of times last night as well, and Biden said, "I am the Democratic Party," and he said, I have a climate change plan. It's called the Biden plan." He did not come out in favor of defunding the police. So he tried to put an end to the myths that Trump and his allies are circulating about Biden. One of the pundits on TV yesterday who works, a debate coach, I guess it was, saying debates are about message and moments. And you got to get your message across, and I guess Trump did. It's that Biden is captive of the far left. I don't think he made much headway on the Biden is too old to do the job. Basically, it's the too far left that he's going to be taken captive by the left-wing elements in his party, and that too, law and order belongs to Trump, and that Biden doesn't have any law enforcement agencies backing him. I thought that segment of the debate was probably Trump's strongest section. And, you know, Biden's message was, "I have a plan. I will help us get out of this COVID epidemic. I know how to make the government work. I can protect health care. I have a jobs plan." And Trump made no effort, really, to outline any kind of second-term agenda. He's all just about winning. And then if that's message, so I guess each side did get out their message, and Trump did try to do it on the economy as well. He gets challenged on his claim that it's the greatest economy ever in the world, and he came across as way too narcissistic by saying when the pandemic came along what he had to go through. "What I went through, Joe," he said, you couldn't handle it, what I went through. I had to shut down the greatest economy in the world." You know, personalizing it as opposed to all of the people who are suffering because the economy is shut down and because of the virus. So So I thought that wasn't a good moment for the president. But when you talk about moments, there are so many moments in that debate that capture the strengths and the weaknesses of each man. That is a lot to work with. I'm amazed that your people were able to put together a four-minute segment. You could put together multiple four-minute segments, and pretty soon you'd be up to 90 minutes. I thought it was pretty riveting. I didn't want to look away.
It was definitely interesting, and to try to boil it down is very, very hard to a four-minute segment. But I think one of the questions yesterday, and I was watching a lot of the talk shows yesterday afternoon, long before the debate got started last night, and what I kept hearing was, Biden can't lose his cool. He can't sink to President Trump's level, because we thought that's what might happen last night as the media. And when those moments happened, shut up. From Biden, calling him a clown twice, and the second time trying to go back and say a person, saying he was a racist. Did Biden lose it to a degree last night? Did he do something he shouldn't have done?
If you want to just splice those moments together without context, you could say yes, but I would say no, because losing his cool because he's angry on behalf of the voters, he's angry on our behalf, makes sense. I thought he handled the questions about Hunter Biden well. I think he said my son had a drug, he might have even said he was an addict, he was a drug problem. He was pretty clear about that, and I think he said, you know, this is something other people, other families have to deal with as well. And then when he talked about the son, Bo, the one who died of brain cancer, and how he served in the military, and Trump somehow managed to trample all over that. I thought Biden could have gotten way more exercised about his personal family issues, and he didn't. He kept his cool there. He got angry at the inability of the president to recognize the pain in this country from people dying and from people losing their jobs and their work. So, you know, again, if you watch the whole thing through, I think you'd be sitting there saying, I'm amazed Biden doesn't get more worked up. If you want to isolate a few moments, I mean, maybe he would have used a different word, but I think he's called Trump a clown in the past, too. And I don't know that either man said anything that they haven't said before, but they haven't said it when they're standing, 10 feet apart on the stage, 12 feet apart on the stage.
You know, Eleanor, I guess the big question is, and maybe this is part of it, in all the debates that there have been in the 60-year televised history of presidential debates now, I never remember the next day, especially after a first debate, the debate being the story. And it almost seems that way. Not that people aren't pointing out points and things, and there's not spin going on from both sides, but the debate seems to be the story. So I guess the question is, debates are not going to go away, as some people suggested last night, but in the 60-year history of presidential debates, was that the worst one, however we gauge these things?
It depends on the meaning of worst. we have a president who has denigrated a lot of our small-d democratic norms, who is threatening not to abide by the results of the election, who is telling an armed right-wing extremist group to stand back and stand by. And so, in my view, I think this is the worst president ever. And so it shouldn't be a surprise that this is the worst debate ever in terms of presidential performance. I don't really like to label it that way. Again, I think it was very revealing of a man who wants another 4 years as president, who is unable to provide any second-year vision or plan other than keeping power. And I think that's something that the American people should have right before them as they go to cast their vote. And of course, hundreds of thousands of people are already voting because voting has started in a number of states already.
You are right that the next debate will be town hall format, but the third debate will be back to kind of what we had last night. What should the moderator of the third debate learn from Chris Wallace last night?
I think the moderator of the third debate should have a button to cut off the microphone of either candidate when they interrupt, so that each side abides by the two-minute time that they're each allotted to speak uninterrupted. Then it's supposed to be open debate back and forth. But if they interrupt each other, I would use the cutoff switch. I think that's the best thing that can be provided.
A final question on this, because I think this is interesting, because Chris Wallace has done this before, and we certainly don't want to put any blame on Chris Wallace for this, but just because of what happened and what people were saying, do you think he will ever moderate a debate again?
Yes.
Yeah.
Although he's, there's this new stars coming up. Jim Lehrer was who died a couple of years ago with PBS. I mean, he did all of the debates for Gore, and he did debates before that. So I think I'd be amazed if this evolves with Chris Wallace taking the blame. I mean, I thought he did his best to handle a situation that was really unmanageable.
Eleanor, it was very interesting last night, and I'm certainly glad you joined us this morning, because it's a lot to unpack, as you say. It's one of those debates, usually you can take highlights and boil them down to about 4 or 5 minutes. There was no possible way to do that last night, because from beginning to end, 90 minutes was something else.
Right, exactly.
So, thank you, Eleanor.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Eleanor Clift, we're coming back with Sam Donaldson after the break.
So much.
Thank you, Mr. Donahue.
Okay, kid. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Phil Donahue, how about that?
Remember WGH Radio, where in the world, by down.